Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Buongiorno, Rose City, and welcome into the Soccer Made in Portland podcast. I'm Ryan Clark, back from a two-week jaunt through the Italian countryside with my now fiance Emma Knight, and here to talk some Portland Timbers and Thorns soccer with the one and only Chris Reifer. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
On the ammo, Ryan. congratulations on the engagement and welcome back. Congratulations both to you and Emma. How was the trip? Fill us in on what's going on in Italy. Where did y'all go? What did y'all eat?
Oh, it was great. So we flew into Milan and started our trip in the north there. Spent a couple days in that city and then went down through Parma, Bologna, Florence, the Tuscan countryside and kind of the Chianti wine region, and finished off in Rome for a couple of days and saw all the big sites there. So it was a lot of moving around, a lot of different places that we stayed, but really an excellent trip. Ate and drank our way through a country that is bountiful in both of those categories. That is what you do when you go. You look at ruins, you drink wine, yep, and you eat excellent food. And the variety of meals we had, even though it was, you know, a lot of starch, a lot of pasta, was excellent. You know, the people there were super friendly. It was a very easy, low impact trip with minimal hiccups, which is always a good thing when you're traveling overseas. But, you know, the Italian people are accustomed to catering to brainless idiots like Americans who have descended on their country like in packs, and you see it in Rome and Florence much more so than the other places we went. But you know, it's a great place for English speaking tourists to travel because it's very accommodating, very low impact, and I'm grateful to have learned a lot over the course of the 2 weeks, in addition to obviously having major life events happen and eating really good food. So it was a lot of fun.
Selfishly, I have to ask you, how was Tuscany?
Oh, terrific. Yeah. We stayed in a little countryside B&B, in Tuscany. Nice. in kind of the Chianti wine region. And you know, it's, everything is a bit of a drive just because of the sheer size. And the curviness of the roads is a bit of a challenge, in addition to obviously Italian drivers are not shy on the road. But it was really cool. I mean, you get the full, I think, authentic cultural Italian experience when you're in that area. The only complaint I guess I would have is that we may have gone like a month or two too early, because a good number of things in that area are closed right now. For the season, yeah, which is always what happens.
Sort of off-season.
Yeah, they ramp it up big time in the summer. But you know, terrific family-owned restaurants, wineries that compete in my mind and in my heart with a lot of the great ones in our state, in terms of the quality of the wines and the experience that you get. It's just beautiful too. I mean, we had a great view from our B&B, but you know, everywhere you drive, everywhere you look, it's like a storybook view, and it lives up to what everybody talks about when it comes to the beauty of the Italian countryside, for sure.
So I feel like we should have had Gio on for this segment alone, only just like no soccer questions, solely to debrief your trip to Italy. And I'm actually getting ready to take one myself in the summer. I'm going to go do a couple of weeks and 1 week sort of on a running trip up through the Dolomites up in Northern Italy. And then we're sort of weighing options for the second week, and Tuscany is one of the candidates. And so yeah, we should have had Gio on for like, you know, debriefing years and giving me tips on mine, which would have been of absolutely no interest to all of our listeners. And then they would have been absolutely shocked that we had the Timbers coach on and didn't ask a single question about soccer. But that would have made me very happy from, you know, just like a, you know, this whole thing is a bit kind of perspective.
Right. I think you just need to call Gio and just talk to him, because that he did the same thing with me. Like before I went, I was talking to him about it, and he's obviously someone that, you know, of Italian background, travels to Italy pretty much every year, loves the city of Florence specifically. He's good friends with the coach of Fiorentina. He actually, you know, in conversations that we had in Palm Springs off air after the interview that I did down there with him, he was trying to figure out the dates that I was in Florence so that he could try and hook me up with like a being able to see the stadium at Fiorentina, but unfortunately team was out on the road, so he couldn't give me the hookup as far as that goes. And you know, that was fun to talk with Gio about that, because he's extremely passionate about what is his own, you know, culture and background. Obviously he grew up in South America and Venezuela, but you know, it's different. Yeah, he loves going there with his family.
We'll have him back for another Italy tourism made in Portland segment at some point. But let's actually talk about soccer. There is a bit to talk about, and honestly, I feel like we have to open up with breaking news, so to speak. The Thorns kit has leaked. They're getting a new secondary kit, a new white kit this year. It is, as you put it, and as you understood it was going to be, polarizing. I put a poll in the field. I like polls to get an idea of where folks are on it, with 309 votes. So like, you know, a decent number of precincts reporting, but not all of them. Polls aren't closed yet. If you are in line, stay in line. But the options were for describing the kit: awesome, awful, or somewhere in the middle. So we've got 25% awesome, 42% awful, and 33% somewhere in the middle. So I think polarizing sounds about right. Maybe most importantly, and I guess we should, you know, from a just the facts perspective, we should give our listeners who maybe are not on the internet as much as we are, a description of the kit. It's a white, you know, white kit like the national team kits. It's got the crest in the middle, but then I think it's fair to say it's got sort of Ed Hardy inspired kind of tattoo style roses on both the chest and the shoulders, with thorns and, you know, all of those kinds of appropriate images. And yeah, so that is the overall impression. But most importantly, the internet has had a lot of fun with this, because the folks in the online Thorns community launched a bit of a meme last night of that kit memes. So Ryan, do you have any that kit memes for us? And just to put you on the spot, I came prepared. I did my homework.
I'm glad you did. You know, speaking from the top of my head here, and without any sort of, you know, joke preparation, I didn't write a stand up bit on these kits, but just looking at them and thinking about the idea that they're supposed to look like tattoos, right?
Yeah.
I've got a few random tattoos on my arm. You know, people may agree or disagree about whether they look good, but I they're simple. You know, they don't stand out. They don't have a distinct style. It's just kind of black line tattoos. These tattoos, I saw somebody in the replies describe them as like old school Portland. I don't really agree with that very much. I think that there are people in Portland, particularly people in the Timbers Army and Rose City Riveters, who have far higher quality tattoos than what is shown on these jerseys. it's hard to wrap my head around some of the specific details of it. One of them being that Rose City Till I Die, which is obviously more closely associated with the Timbers, is featured more prominently on the tiny little banner that is above the crest, is more featured more prominently than By Any Other Name, which is very obviously, you know, the Thorns go to. That's weird to me. And the green being, you know, part of the accents is fine, since, you know, the stems of roses, I guess, are green a lot of the time. Not always, I don't think. But, you know, traditional rose, you think of the stem as green, that's okay. But it's weird because it's kind of got that, like, I don't know, that Timbersy feel to it, especially with the TikTok sponsorship on there as well. It's just, it's weird. It feels like a hybrid kit in some ways. I do like the one thing that I like the most is the old school crest being on there with the actual colors, rather than kind of just like a generic, you know, black crest, which I think looks really cool on the black and red uniforms. The knife is interesting. There's two stars on the knife, and then the third star for the third championship is like hanging above it with like Roman numerals,
which strikes me as like they worked that in as a design element. And then after they won the championship last year, they were like, oh shoot, we got to get another star in this somehow. Like we got to go back and wrench this in somewhere.
Yeah. Some Nike exec chewing on a cigar is like, yeah, just put it above the knife. Like, I don't know. It's very confusing and confounding. I feel like I kind of like it and would like to see it, as Meg Linehan put it, like on a human before I make any complete judgments. But it's kind of just gauche. It's like ugly in a lot of ways too. And it just strikes you as like, what is going on here? Especially considering there's like nothing below the sponsor line. So it's like all chest and shoulders.
And that to me, you know, it feels a little bit imbalanced to me. So it, look, you know, as I kind of said on Twitter last night, this kit just isn't for me. For clearly for some, approximately 25% of people, it is for them. but I'm not one of those 25% of folks. But, and I think this is like an important point, I like that the Thorns and Nike did something with this one, because that has not been the case around the league. What we've seen of the kit releases around the league so far has been, to put it quite frankly, dire. Lots of white, lots of plain black, one plain orange, with, you know, very, 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 very subtle design elements or no design elements at all. And frankly, I think when you look around the league, it looks like somebody just, you know, went to Target, grabbed a few jerseys and kind of just threw them on some teams. I mean, in some ways, it reminds me of the jerseys that we had in 2013 when the league was just starting up, and they very clearly sort of, you know, had to do just kind of a full run of templates. The one exception to that, and the shirt that I think is quite nice that has launched so far, is the Gotham shirt. That's a pretty good one. I think they did a nice job with that. Otherwise, though, it's been quite bleak. And so I like and I appreciate the fact that the Thorns took a swing and did something bold and something interesting, even if it didn't quite come off for me. I will always prefer it when teams take swings, even if they miss, than when we have team after team after team coming out with just wholly uninspired stock, you know, plain jerseys. So I, you know, most of my wrath goes toward the uninspired. It does not go toward the inspired, albeit perhaps you know, misdirected. But we need to get back to the memes, because that's critical here. There have been a whole lot of that kit jokes on the internet. You know, there have been a few that I've seen. One was like, that kit knows every episode of the Joe Rogan Experience by heart. That's great. That's a really good one. There have been a number of others. I don't want to take any credit away from others, but Ryan, I want to hear your that kit jokes.
Let me get a look at this thing again, because I need to all like right, fully develop the meme in my head for a moment.
So it's clear you haven't done your homework. So I'm going to go first while you
go first.
You research. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That kit has a refrigerator full of non-traditional Mountain Dew flavors. That kit owns every single episode of NCIS on DVD. That kit knows that next year is going to be the year he gets an audition to be on Love Island. And that kit really, really wants you to take a Jaeger bomb. Those are my submissions to the that kit meme. What you got?
That kit got the tattoo in college, but was in college in 2004. By the looks of it.
Hey, as people who are in college in 2004, like, I'm a little bit offended by that. Like, I feel like mine weren't like personal. Yours were just like personal.
Well, it's a dated tattoo. Look, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you see people I'm sure we have listeners that have roses tattooed on them. I actually have ambition to get some sort of rose type tattoo, but I don't know, man. It's tacky. It's like, it's not.
I saw somebody make a comment about how like something like that kit loves the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I was like, dang it. I wish I'd thought about that one first. That kit
lives in Hermiston. There's another one for you.
That would be a watermelon kit, right? Like that's the driving engine of the Hermiston economy.
Well, then it would work with if you had those as tattoos, right? Because then you could weave kind of the vines of the watermelon in with the thorns of the roses, right? You could fit a little watermelon into. Why is there no watermelon on the kit? There's your question of the day for the fine folks in Hermiston. Maybe we have one listener from there. Who knows? But
almost certainly not.
If you are from Hermiston, tag us on Twitter at SoccerMaidenPDX and express your disdain for my hashtag Hermiston Slam that I just put down.
That's right.
So strange kits.
All right. Any other personally insulting that kit jokes you have, or should we move off this bit and talk about soccer?
I'm going to give it time to breathe. Honestly, I want to see it on people and like in a game before I completely destroy it. It's very ugly. I don't like it, but maybe it'll improve. It's kind of,
I mean, I don't think it will improve. I think perhaps the contextual, you know, the context around it might elevate it somewhat, but yeah, it's not for me, but I appreciate this point.
It's a lot like last year's Timbers season, right? On its surface, very unappealing, very bland, kind of half-hearted.
But it's not bland. That's the thing. So I think it's an unfair comparison. Like it's like the 2014 Timbers season, where like they were doing lots of things that were like interesting, but just not very good.
I think it tries to do so many things that are interesting that it is somehow not interesting, that it's like, oh, they just like went too hard. I don't know. I would like to see some higher quality photos of it on a human being before we get any further. Maybe they'll wear them in the next week because they have a preseason tournament, the Thorns do, that starts on Sunday. You like that segue? And
brilliant. They won't wear them, but
no,
but
they probably won't because they officially have not revealed them. But who knows? Maybe in the last game of the tourney, they'll bring them out. The first game though is on Sunday against Racing Louisville, Rossing Louisville for listeners of this podcast. and then they on Wednesday they play the USU 23s. Then they get a chance to face rival OL Reign in the third of the three preseason matches on Saturday. That figures to be more of a dress rehearsal type game for the team as they look ahead to their opener on March 26th. That is going to be an important tournament for the team as they continue to develop in the preseason, continue to blend together again with essentially the same cast. So it's not as much work as you might otherwise have. But injury-wise, Mike Norris spoke to me this week a little bit about it. Sophia Smith is training in full. She's back. There's no real concern there about limitations, from my understanding. Reina Reyes has a small knock that she got in the off season. And Tegan McGrady has a knock from the off season as well. McGrady is likely out for a little bit longer. Reyes, they are hoping, is ready for the opener. And she is somebody who, given her versatility, given the fact she can be both an outside back and maybe pop into the midfield a little bit, that they're really excited about. I've also heard a lot about Izzy Diakia as somebody that could potentially be a contributor, whether it's during the World Cup, she has her breakout, or maybe, you know, down the line. She's somebody they like a lot. And those young players coming into the fold of a team that is extremely deep, that is extremely talented, that's coming off a championship, is something to really keep an eye on. And it seems like the Timbers season, you know, is trudging along in its early stages, and then out of nowhere, oh yeah, here come the Thorns. They're ready to defend their title. And it's a big year with obviously the World Cup swirling around everything. But this next week is going to be exciting for fans to finally see the Thorns back on the field, and that begins on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, the animating principle over the course of the offseason has been, where possible, run it back. And in some notable places that was not possible, but in terms of the roster and the starting 11, this is a very, very, very similar unit that we saw, you know, really sort of kind of take the 2022 season by the horns. And I very much expect that that's going to be the ambition this year. I think the big question is whether running it back is going to be enough in light of improvement with some other teams around the league. I think KC is the team that first comes to mind that has made a number of moves this winter that, you know, I mean, they made it to the title, but I think the book on KC in 2022 was that they overachieved a little bit. Now this is truly and you know, I guess to just highlight that point, I think we saw that in the final. The Current were overmatched by the Thorns in the final. And they went out and reinforced in a number of ways in which their ambitions are very clearly not to be overmatched in games like that again. And so whether running it back is going to be enough for the Thorns, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think sort of that approach to the offseason was probably the only truly, really super viable approach for the Thorns. But I also think it just makes a ton of sense. You had a great team from last year. I frankly think there's still upside in this team. I think you look at two of their three most important players in Sophia Smith and Sam Coffey. It's a little bit of a hot take, but I feel like after 2022, probably not a ton of a hot take. They are both pre-prime, right? They are both players whom you would expect to still have some upside, which is a scary thought, especially with Smith, reigning MVP, the fact that you would expect that she is still going to continue to get better. I think with Sam Coffey, as good as she was in 2022, that was her first year really running a midfield. And so you would very much expect her to progress, and maybe even progress quite a bit from where she was in 2022. And if all of that happens, this team's got upside. They're also going to be welcoming back Crystal Dunn, who missed most of 2022. For the best reasons imaginable. And she is back. She's in form. She is fit and ready to be a full-time contributor in 2023. And, you know, I don't think there are a ton of positions that you look around the field for the Thorns and say they will expect to get substantially less in 2023 than they did in 2022. Maybe you're worried a little bit about some regression due to age from Christine Sinclair and Becky Sauerbrunn. We haven't seen it, frankly, so far with Sauerbrunn. She's looked great with the national team so far this winter. And so that hasn't happened yet. But even then, the Thorns are going to be welcoming back to the fold Emily Mengus, who was hurt for most of 2022. And before that was one of the most consistently solid center backs in the league. And that's in addition to Kelly Hubley, who remains at that position. And so, you know, I think when you look at this team, even running it back has some upside for just internal progression and internal development. And then you add on the fact that there is at least the possibility. This sounds like a possibility, although nobody has said it, but it makes sense with the trade of Yasmin Ryan that may be sort of setting the stage from a cap perspective to do so, of welcoming Lindsay Horan back in the summer after the World Cup, when her loan ends. And if that happens, then you know, that's one of the biggest moves that any team in the league has made this year. So, you know, I think there is lots of reason, if you're a Thorns fan, to be optimistic. But look, they've got some competition that's improved over the course of the offseason. And I think that really is going to be the question. And then, of course, there's the question of how the coaching transition goes. They made the decision to hire Norris that they made in order to maintain as much continuity as possible. Obviously, he was the chief assistant last year. And so you would expect that development would go and that transition would go just fine. It would be a pretty smooth one. But there's always risk when you're making a coaching change. And so, you know, those are going to be the storylines to watch. I'm looking forward to seeing this team back on the field, though. I think given the continuity, this is the kind of team that you would expect to really show some things even early in preseason, because there is so much that is common from 2022. You don't think that this is the kind of team that's going to spend most of its preseason just figuring things out. And so I'm looking forward to going to my first game of the year on Sunday against Rossing, and seeing this team back out on the field, because I think there are lots of reasons as a Thorns fan to be bullish.
Am I wrong? I think you're completely right, and made a lot of great points as far as the roster construction, as far as what they're bringing back. This is a lethal team, just as they were last year. Horan, by all counts that I've heard, is likely going to be back after that World Cup, and that's a massive addition to a team that's already pretty crowded in terms of talent in that midfield. Hina Sugita has had a full year under her belt and will be even more comfortable playing in NWSL.
Looks good for a pretty fun Japan team.
Yeah, exactly, and it'll be fun to see her to see all these different Thorns stars for these different countries in the World Cup too. I mean, that's something that, you know, it will interrupt the season. It will create a stretch where they're going to have younger players step up, because they have a ton of players on their team that contribute for their World Cup squads for their country. But at the same time, it's going to be really fun, I think, for Thorns fans to see the emergence of Sophia Smith on the biggest stage, to see Christine Sinclair playing in what will likely be her final World Cup, along with Janine Becky, and competing with Canada, which is a team obviously that is likely to contend as well. That's an underlying and maybe overlying storyline of this season, that's going to be fun. And the first half of the year, I think, is going to be a major focus for the Thorns on racking up as many points as they can while they've got the full squad, staying healthy, building up a position in the standings to where, regardless of what happens during the World Cup break, those players can come back, ease their way back in after what's going to be a long World Cup for a lot of them, particularly the U.S. players, and just make a run and try and assert yourself into a position where you can have home field, you can do what you did last year and set yourself up to play one home game to get yourself into the NWSL championship. I do think that the rest of the league has made up a lot of ground. Like you said, KC is a team that has loaded up its roster, but you know, they still need to mesh. They don't have that level of chemistry, that level of rapport that the Thorns have. So I think the Thorns still have the edge, but it's closer. And as we know, in the NWSL, chaos can often reign.
No question. You'd expect San Diego to take another step forward.
100%.
Even internally development. You'd expect them to take another step forward, and they were very good. By the eye test, I thought they were probably the second best team in NWSL that I saw last year.
Yes, 100%. And they showed that in the game against the Thorns. That was a highly competitive game. Yeah. That were it not for the miracle, amazing strike of Crystal Dunn, that game is going into extra time, right? And that would have been anyone's game after that point, because there were some dead legs out there. And it was a very highly competitive game after a long, arduous season. The Reign are Shield winners, and they still bring back a lot of talent. I think if any of the top teams could potentially take a slight step back, it might be them, just because of the age of a lot of the players on their roster and the changes around the rest of the league are exciting.
And Angel City adding Alyssa Thompson, who scored a magnificent goal last night against Tigres in a friendly.
She's already balling, right? I mean, that's a team to look out for as well, particularly if Kristen Press comes back at a decent time. She won't really likely be with the World Cup team, so that's an opportunity for her probably during that stretch to rehab, come back and get to a high level. And we know that she's a game changer. So, you know, the NWSL has a lot of parity. It's exciting. The league is going to continue to expand in the coming years, and popularity is growing. We still don't really know what channels all the games are going to be on, but that's another story.
But frankly, I mean, if you're a broadcaster looking at NWSL this year, it's a really attractive league to get on your airwaves or your whatever the waves are on
stream waves. I don't know.
Stream waves, the series of tubes or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I am as excited for this NWSL season as maybe any. I mean, we have a really impressive collection of personalities in the league. Now, the quality of play is only getting better. There's, I think, going to be a pretty compelling race at the top now. And so, I mean, I think looking into this 2023 season, it kind of ticks all the boxes for intrigue, and for something that you'd want to tune into.
And they're in FIFA.
And they're in FIFA, which is right. With that being the video game, they have always been, I guess, governed by FIFA, the organization. But now they're in EA Sports's video game, which is the sort of the gateway into soccer for many, many people playing that. Their NWSL is going to be there. The question is whether all the goal celebrations are going to be there, mostly talking about Levante and Kansas City, the, I think, undisputed queen of NWSL goal celebrations. Are all the cellies going to get in? The video seemed to suggest yes, or at least some of them, but you got to have a number of them.
The video did show Levante's celebration, but it was kind of a blend between like the game and real life footage, and her celly was real life footage. We did see the Sophia Smith shrug in game in that video, which was really cool.
How much better, by the way, are NWSL goal celebrations than MLS? Like, it's
infinitely better. It's a matter of so. Ego. It's a matter of like the guys in MLS just like are comparatively way more self-important than NWSL players. NWSL players are willing to, you know, in their competitive fire, they're willing to have some fun. And that's great.
Yeah, like the dudes are spinning around and pointing at the name on the back while like Morgan Weaver is doing the blow up thing. Levante's like doing the putting one. We got the shrug. We've got the twerking. I mean, it's a whole nother level, and it's caught on. We've seen multiple NFL players take inspiration from Levante and her Sally. Yeah. So you know, it's another level. It better make its way into the video game because it is part of NWSL culture now.
It 100% is. And it's, look, we're not going to see, you know, Evander twerking in celebration this year. We're not going to see, that would be hilarious. We're not going to see Dyrone Asprilla. I mean, he's got the backflip, which is cool, but we're not going to see him doing the wacky waving, inflatable arm flailing tube man celebration with Sebastian Blanco. Like those things are just not going to happen.
It's gotta be Zach McGraw, right? Like he would be the inflatable arm waving tube guy.
He does have the longest arms and is the tallest guy. So he could most definitely fill that role. But I wish there was more of that type of fun stuff in MLS, but you know, NWSL is unique and fun in that respect. And I'm glad that they have that aspect, but yeah, highly competitive season ahead. The Thorns are going to be one of the contenders. And I really don't think we can fully assess it until the dust has settled on the World Cup and a few weeks have gone by even after that, as the players get reintegrated. But that doesn't mean that the first half is in any way meaningless or that even the stretch without the World Cup players is meaningless at all. Every point matters, as we know, with the tightness of those standings.
Yeah, and the way NWSL's playoffs are set up, it's really critical to get that home game. And so, you know, I mean, the Shield race is much more compelling from match day one until the end of the season than it is in MLS as well, which I think isn't just another thing that makes the NWSL regular season so much more compelling.
Yeah, it matters. Like the MLS regular season is becoming less and less important as the playoffs expand, as these little gimmicky things start to happen.
Three game series and the like, but yes. NWSL, it's still get into the playoffs. You've got one game. If you're not one in the top two, it's not going to be at home. And that's what you got to do to win the title. And so, you know, I think you've got a good pack that's going to be pursuing one of those two spots. And I think that race is going to be hot from kickoff. And so I agree with you that, you know, it is important, of course, for teams to be in good form after the World Cup, both for that stretch run and for the playoffs themselves. But frankly, if you're not good before the World Cup, you're probably going to be far enough behind the eight ball that it doesn't matter.
Moving on to the Portland Timbers, while I was sleeping soundly in my very comfortable bed at the Airbnb in Rome, they played the folks down in LA, LAFC, and lost 3-2. They were down 3-0 at half. I woke up in
after half.
Yes, just after half. I woke up in the middle of the night, or I guess in the wee hours of the morning, and checked my phone and saw that at halftime. And I was like, okay, don't have to, you know, stress about this. Just gonna go back to sleep and wake up and see. It'll probably be a similar score in the morning. But, you know, they, after what you described as a brutal first hour, they kicked it into high gear for that last half hour and scored two goals. One of them, the first for Evander, which was exciting and showcased just the power that he strikes the ball with and the threat that he is in the counterattack. And then the other from Christian Paredes, who did a nice little celebration, putting the ball on his shirt like he did last year. And it's the same reason. He's got another baby on the way. So congratulations to the Paredes clan for their new addition that's coming. Babies made in Portland, a continual segment on this podcast. But I think there are some negatives and positives, obviously, to take away from the game. Obviously, the first half, you know, just looking at the highlights from my perspective, brutal, not what you want at all. A showcase, I think, of what a lot of people were worried about when Tui Loma was traded is the idea that, you know, defensively they were shaky last year. Why take a quality piece out of the picture, especially
and in particular, just getting dominated on set pieces?
Yes, exactly. And then the second half showcasing a positive, you know, the idea that they, you know, aren't going to just lay down. They actually will fight tooth and nail to potentially get a point out of it, which they very nearly did. So what were your, you know, impressions, takeaways watching that full game?
You know, it is definitely not sky is falling kind of stuff. And I think having the little bit of a fight back in the second half certainly helps ward off some of those feelings, even though those feelings would be a little bit premature if it had ended 3-0. But it is concerning how thoroughly they got dominated on set pieces. And I thought Matt Doyle mid game made a good point that because LAFC plays such attractive soccer, sometimes people forget that they were really, really good on attacking set pieces last year. So that's a strength for them. But you can't, I mean, they should have given away three on set pieces. They had a let off on one with a little bit of a phantom foul call. But they should have given away three in the first half, all on corner kicks, which is not good. That's very, very poor and is something that they urgently need to address. There were long stretches of last year where they also struggled defending set pieces. So this is also not a new problem for the Timbers, and it's something they need to clean up. Kind of surprisingly, and I think one thing that you can actually, even from that first hour, look at as something that was, that's maybe a sign, an encouraging sign, is they actually defended pretty well from the run of play. LAFC didn't have a ton of chances other than those set pieces. And that's a pretty high powered attacking LAFC team at home. And I think overall, when you looked at the way the Timbers were defending from the run of play, there was a lot to like. And that was the case through most of the game. And so I think that is something that looked better than expected against Kansas City in match day one. And I think probably still looks better than expected, even after shipping three to LAFC last week. The thing that was most bleak, though, about the first hour, and this obviously wasn't good against Kansas City either, was the attack. I mean, the Timbers weren't close to scoring in that first hour. The goal kind of came out of nowhere. And I think there are a number of reasons that you can point to. You know, folks have talked a lot about Evander. I think, frankly, it's about as expected right now, that it takes a little bit of time. I agree with Gio Savarese's comment afterward that he's adjusting to the speed of the league. We see that a lot, especially with players coming in from sort of mid-tier European leagues. MLS, in some ways, is behind those leagues in terms of quality and sometimes even in terms of tactical sophistication. But MLS does move fast. It is a fast and physical league. And we see players come in from those leagues have a little bit of an adjustment period to the speed of the game here. And Gio said after the game that he thinks that's a little bit of what's going on with Evander, and I agree with him. I think it looks like that's the case. Still found a way to make an impact. But you know, I mean, in the end, that doesn't concern me very much. I agree with the folks who have been pointing out that Santi Moreno has been pretty rough. The numbers agree with that as well. He's given the ball away a lot. And you know, again, that's something that young players, especially, you got to remember, he missed a good amount of preseason while he was away getting his green card. And so he looks like a guy who is still getting into form. And so that's understandable. But I think we've talked about this a lot on this podcast. The thing that I think just is a killer for the attack has been the play of Yaroslav Nijgoda. He's played about 138 minutes or 130 minutes so far this year. He has a grand total of 38 touches on the ball. He has not taken a shot. He frankly has been just kind of a black hole. And it's really hard to attack one attacker down, right?
Especially at that position, right?
Especially at that position. And we've seen the Timbers get into spots and not be able to turn getting into spots into creating a chance. And when you've got a striker who two games into the season hasn't taken a shot yet and isn't, you know, making a meaningful difference in the buildup, that's something that you really have to look at. I don't think the Timbers can start him next week. Nathan, frankly, has looked better. The team has looked better with Nathan on the field. The team has looked more dangerous as a collective with Nathan on the field. When teams press the Timbers, Nathan is a guy, because he's athletic and because he's willing to make some of those runs into space, that you can play over the top to. And that's going to be important against St. Louis, because St. Louis is very much a team that's come out to press.
And he's creative. That's the other thing with Nathan. Like he does things that are non-traditional. He's not just like a stick and score, like just wait for the ball to come to me kind of guy. And that's not, you know, to disparage Nijgoda. I don't think that he has that attitude where he just is waiting for somebody else to make the play for him. But he doesn't have a shot, and he's showing a lot of the same issues that he had last year, where he was, you know, maybe in the right spaces, but never was effective, wasn't creative, and wasn't the dynamic type of striker that they need. I think that adding Frank Bolli into the mix is going to be good, but it's going to take him a while to adjust. And in the near term, while you're waiting for him to show up, while you're waiting for him to get to fitness if he needs to, Nathan seems to be the better answer at that position right now. And you know, I talked to Yaro in preseason. He acknowledged that he had to be better this year, that he needed to have more quality stretches than just the one kind of little space that he had during last season where he was dynamite and then the rest was rough. It's been all rough these first two games, and you know, the leash for Gio Savarese, I'm sure, is short in terms of Yaro, given last year's performance. And this game against St. Louis, I think, is a good opportunity to give Nathan a shot, see how he performs and go from there. But he, everything I've seen in terms of highlights, in terms of game replays that I've watched, have shown me that, that Nathan is probably the better answer right now at that position. In general, the team is dealing with a lot of injuries and is kind of piecemealing everything else together, particularly in the midfield, with no Blanco, with no Jimmy Chara. It's really unfortunate because I think that fully healthy, that's an unbelievably talented midfield in terms of like the rest of MLS. They're one of the more talented groups. And Blanco is at a point now with his knee issues where they're not rushing him. They don't have a specific timeline for him to come back. It's residual problems that he dealt with all of last season and that he played through, much to his own detriment in a lot of cases, as we've talked about before. He couldn't even play with his kids. He was having trouble going upstairs. That matters way more than suiting up for the Portland Timbers. So his ability to play should rest fully on his ability to not cause more detriment to his own life. And Jimmy Chara is out for a while now. We know that. Gio initially said a couple of weeks. Talking to him yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? All the days are blending together as I return here to the American lands. He talked about Jimmy and said it's probably going to be, you know, longer. And, you know, if you think about longer than 2 to 3 weeks, you're in the months territory, because even if he returns to some level of activity after a month, which would be like the minimum, that's another month with a touchy injury like a hamstring of majorly careful rehabilitation and ramp up to be able to return to the field. That's like the worst possible minor injury you could have in a sport like soccer is a hamstring, because it is so, as you pointed out on Twitter, it's so touchy, it's so finicky that you can't mess with it. Otherwise you could tear it, you could re-aggravate it, and then you're just back to square one.
It's like oblique injuries in baseball, where it's just like, it's one of those things where it might not be that serious from like an MRI perspective, but you need your hamstrings to be 100% to play effective soccer, because they're so easy to re-injure. And if they're not 100%, then just can't play. That's going to be a difficult one. And I think Marvin Loria has not been great sort of in his opportunity in the first couple of games to step in as a starter on the wing, either opposite Moreno or Jimmy Chara. I think, frankly, that those things combined with the play of Mosquera and Bravo, I think probably should have Gio Savarese really considering going to the five back or three back setup that they used in the waning minutes against LAFC. That looked pretty good. It gets two of their more effective players higher up the pitch where they've been effective. I guess I just described effective players as effective, which isn't super grammatically insightful, but you know, I mean, and it puts them in a position where they're putting those, you know, players who have had a better open to the season in promising spots and taking some guys who have struggled off the field, or at least out of the starting lineup, and kind of getting their best 11 or their most effective 11 out on the pitch. And so, you know, I think that if I were calling the shots is the direction the Timbers would be going this next week against St. Louis, which, you know, notwithstanding St. Louis winning their first two games, one of them was a home game against Charlotte and sort of their home opener in MLS. That's a game that you basically always see expansion teams win, even when they're really bad. Remember when the Timbers went to a really terrible FC Cincinnati team in their home opener as they were opening up in Cincinnati and just got trounced, just absolutely got run over by an FC Cincinnati team that went on to win the Wooden Spoon. That happens basically regardless of whether the expansion team is good. That home opener is so difficult for a road team to win. And so that was that. And then they had a good performance against an Austin team in the opener that has since gone on to I mean, probably have the two most embarrassing losses in MLS this year, with that loss in the home opener against an expansion team in St. Louis, and then going down and losing 3-0 to a Haitian team in the Dominican Republic. That was, yeah, not a great CCL performance from Austin. I think there are probably some alarm bells going off there. And so, you know, it has been a good open to the season for St. Louis, but the Timbers should be going into this game thinking that this is a game that they should win. And if they don't, the Timbers are gonna have some alarm bells of their own.
Yeah, they'll feel like they're on a bit more shaky ground if they don't get 3 points out of this game, right? Because it's the first major test, I think, for the St. Louis team. Austin, you would have thought, would have been it, but they are flailing a little bit to start out the season. Given the injuries, given, you know, the tenuous nature of everything for the Timbers right now, this is a big one early on to get these 3 points at home. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere, I'm sure, just getting back to normal attendance numbers, getting back to normal weather, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll
think
see.
Things have been a little weird since I got back, even if they aren't as extreme as the snowstorm that I missed. But it's a big one. And testing out different lineups, testing out who can fill in where. You think about players like Diego Gutierrez having an opportunity to step up in Jimmy Chara's absence, Marvin Loria needing to do more in the positions he finds himself in. You know, his speed is great, but everything else hasn't been super great. And
Loria gets the ball a lot because he's direct and because he puts himself in those positions to be dangerous.
He's got good instincts.
But when you get the ball in those spots, I mean, it's almost the opposite problem of Yaroslav Niezgoda, right?
Yeah.
When Yaro gets the ball in those spots, he's really dangerous and he's a really good finisher. Now, Loria plays a different position, but it's kind of the opposite problem. He is good at getting into those spots and he attracts the ball a lot because he gets there and then doesn't make anything of it.
Yeah.
If you could just combine Loria and Niezgoda, you'd have a really effective attacker, but the two of them separately, problematic.
Yeah, they've got like diverging issues. Divulging. they're sharing all of their problems.
They have divulged their issues over the first two games.
They've divulged them to everybody who's tuned in to watch. So that's a big one on Saturday for the Timbers taking on St. Louis City SC. Any parting thoughts for that game, Mr. Reifer? Any
not necessarily for that game, but I, you know, putting on my Bernie Sanders voice, I am once again asking the Timbers to do these signings in January instead of March.
Yes.
The Timbers are in the market now, apparently for three signings, at center forward, one in center back that's a little bit further out. We'll see if it's a late window, late April kind of signing, or if it's going to be in the summer. And then apparently also for another midfielder, I'm guessing, but it's truly a guess, that that's probably a winger type, but we'll see. Because that's where they're thinnest in midfield. Which all makes sense. It makes sense to sign another number nine. It makes sense to sign another sort of starting quality center back. And I think it makes sense to add somebody on the wing. But I am once again asking the Timbers to do this business in the offseason rather than try to build the plane while it's flying early in the season. I've been asking that for many years. It has not happened, but here I am again.
I do think that the midfield pursuit, and this is not based on any specific conversations, but this is more of a guess, is likely centered around the fact that not only will they not have Jimmy Chara for the next month or two or more, who knows, but Blanco not coming back terribly quickly is concerning. They don't know if he's going to be somebody that they can consistently rely on to be in the lineup, even when he does come back. So, and he's an aging player. You have to think about the next steps quicker than maybe you thought you did, because you bring back Blanco, you bring back Jimmy, and you're like, okay, those are two guys that are going to be regular, consistent, and important players for us. Then Jimmy gets hurt, then Blanco's knee issues continue to plague him from last year, and you're in a very tenuous spot where you believe in Diego Gutierrez as somebody that can step in as a winger and contribute. And Gio has spoken a lot about him. But that thrusts Loria into a tough spot that creates a lack of depth that was not there previously that they're already dealing with in the back end.
It makes it more difficult to get Santiago Moreno on the field, which I think is, you know, I sort of advocated for Moreno maybe not to start against St. Louis. And I'm not super worried about Moreno himself. We've seen him be good enough for long enough that we know that he's a good player, and I think he will get into form. But with wingers in particular, and I mean wingers, not wing backs, but with wingers, if you're going to play with one, you kind of need to play with two. And if you don't have another guy who you're, you know, enthusiastic about starting in a wide attacking area, it's really hard to get Moreno on the field. And I think Moreno is best when he's starting from a wider position. And so I think for that reason too, it probably makes sense for them to look on the market to see if there's somebody else who they can add in those wide areas.
A lot in flux for the Timbers right now. Thorns season coming down the pike. Plenty to talk about for the two of us over the next couple of weeks. Good to be back here stateside, even though I long for a nice glass of Chianti Classico overlooking the countryside as we speak here in the frigid Northwest late winter that we are experiencing right now. But that will do it for us here on Soccer Made in Portland. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Made in PDX. Like us, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review if you so choose. That helps us get an idea of how we are doing. Got any questions for next week's pod? Tweet at us, myself, Reifer, or Soccer Made in PDX. Preferably the Soccer Made in PDX account. I get enough notifications. Thank you, Chris, for another great pod. Thanks for doing what you did last week with Mr. Bill Oram. That was a pun heavy pod, and I enjoyed listening
to
that.
Thanks to Bill for joining for the crossover content. Also, before we head out, happy trails to Sam Staskel, the well-known and exceptionally good writer for The Athletic, who has covered MLS for a lot of years in a couple different capacities. He is going to be headed off to take on some new adventures outside of the journalism world. Frankly, a lot of what we do stands on the shoulders of what Sam and his colleagues do. And so thank you to him for all of his work, especially covering a lot of the issues that are from my selfish perspective, nerdier, but really interesting sort of structurally in MLS. Big organizations like MLS are hard to move. They have a ton of inertia, and they often won't unless somebody's pushing them. And Sam is somebody who has pushed them over the course of his time writing for The Athletic. So thank you to him, and best of luck.
Absolutely. Sam's done a great job at The Athletic, and big shout out to him as somebody who, you know, early on in my opportunity to write about MLS in this league, and soccer generally, he's somebody I look to as a positive example of how to do this job with a very specific moral clarity. Somebody who has a set of values that he imbues in the work that he does, and he will definitely be missed in the soccer sphere. Hopefully, there are others that can try, but probably will not succeed in filling the void that he will leave behind. So shout out to Sam, and thanks again for joining us this week. We will be back next week with a little bit more to talk about in terms of a Thorns season preview, a couple of preseason games under their belt by that time. And we will discuss everything from that St. Louis City game for the Timbers, which is a big one for that club. So thanks again, y'all, and we will see you next week.